If you're still waiting for a sign, here's another one. At California Psychics, we reject 98% of the psychics who apply to work for us. So we only connect you with the best. That's how we can guarantee if your reading isn't life-changing, it's free. And right now, new customers receive 20 minutes for just $20. If that's not a sign, I don't know what is. Dramatic sound effect incoming. Experience the joy of certainty at CaliforniaPsychics.com.
It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
Rico Bronya, episode number 515. By the way, you've heard the same intro to the Rico Bronya for all 515 episodes, the big announcer voice, the old Meet the Met song or whatever that song is. I did create an AI Rico Bronya song while I was on vacation. And at some point, Hoff, we do have to debut it. Now, I'm not telling you it's going to stick forever, but there were a few emails from people saying, hey, can you create a new song? Like do something to intro the Rico Bronya differently. And so I will tell you this about my AI Rico Bronya song. My four-year-old Spence, who was in attendance with me for the Met victory game three against Cincinnati, which we'll get into, he's a big fan. He thought the song was amazing. So at some point next week, we will debut. And then based on your reactions, we'll decide if we keep it or not. We will debut a new Rico Bronya theme song. But let's get to the business at hand. If you want to hear a recap of game one and game two and the David Wright retirement ceremony, I'd advise you to check out episode 514, in which we did all of that. So we will focus on game three, a lot of the news and notes around this team heading into the Angels series. And we'll, of course, pick our Rico on the man now star of the series and the net negative. But before we get to game three, before we get to Francisco Alvarez being called up, I'd like to bitch about something for about 90 seconds. And you tell me, Hoff, if my bitching is lacking merit or you agree with me or you think I'm a fool. I am annoyed. I am annoyed that the Philadelphia Phillies signed David Robertson. I'm annoyed. I'm annoyed because it was just money. Okay, I know it's prorated $16 million, which is a hefty amount of money, but the prorated $16 million is only about $5 million. The Mets could use bullpen help. So could the Phillies, by the way. David Robertson, as a right-handed reliever, always has been tough on lefties. And even with the return of Brooks Raley, who looked good off Tommy John surgery, the Mets could use an arm out of the bullpen who can get lefties out. He's pitched in New York on one, two, three different occasions. Once with the Mets back in 2023, in which he was damn good before they traded him away, and obviously two other times with the Yankees. He's been throwing for teams for a while. Why not sign him? And don't tell me he preferred Philadelphia, because there's no human being that prefers Philadelphia over New York. Even Saquon Barkley didn't actually prefer Philadelphia over New York, except the Giants didn't want him back. So I see that news from Ken Rosenthal that the Philadelphia Phillies, without giving up a prospect or anything because he was on the streets, have improved their bullpen, and we haven't. So I got to tell you, and we'll see what David Robertson does, being a year away from pitching, but it kind of annoys me. It actually does annoy me that David Stearns and Steve Cohen didn't jump on this and bring him back to the Mets.
I'm not going to get as crazy as you are. It's a little disappointing because, again, we do have holes in our bullpen. And I could name about three guys that continuously get opportunities that are worse off than David Robertson. So, yeah, that makes sense. But we need better profile players than him anyway. We do. You still – don't shake your head. You know you need better players than that.
Okay, need better players. Do you think right now the Mets are trading for Emmanuel Clase?
No, not right now.
Okay, you don't think they are. So what bullpen help do you think they're adding at the trade deadline? We know what they added last year. Phil Maton, Wascar Brazoban, Ryan Stanek. Three lottery tickets, as I called it a year ago. David Robertson is a better version of a lottery ticket. And oh, by the way, doesn't cost you anything. He doesn't cost you a damn thing other than money. And yes, the Mets are in the tax. So paying David Robertson $5 million, actually paying him like $12 million, whatever it adds up to. So I know it's financial, but I'd rather add somebody who A, is as accomplished as David Robertson, and B, doesn't cost me anything when it comes to prospects, because I'll make you this side bet. The trade deadline is 11 days away as of this recording. I would be surprised if they add a reliever as accomplished as David Robertson at the trade deadline. So why not just add him when he's sitting there for anyone to sign?
No, you're not wrong. But again, I do I got to be honest. David Stearns, to me, has to make big moves this trade deadline. Like, there's got to be more than just the bottom of the barrel. Let's see who's available. Let's see what deals we can get. Maybe someone sticks. We get three arms and one of them work out. That's great. It's got to be more, because you were in the NLCS last year, and this team right now is showing many signs of not being as good as last year's team.
Well, they're not as of right now. And it, like we talked about on the last episode of the Rico, they're the opposite of last year's team, in which last year's team obviously had the bad start, falling way under 500, and then from late May on was one of the best teams in baseball. I've got two dates I wrote down to kind of look at what this team is. Since June 13th, they are now 11-20. Not good. Since April 25th, and that goes all the way back to right after they swept the Philadelphia Phillies, they are now 38-37, which is not bad, but it's 500. So for 75 games of the 100 they've played, which is easy math, for 75% of the season, the Mets are a 500 team. That's the reality of what they are. But I want to give you a caveat on that. They're a half game out of first place. And the reason they're a half game out of first place is this game we just played describing what the Mets are over their last 31 games or their last 75 games, you can do with the Phillies. If you go back to May 29th, the Phillies are 21-24 in their last 45 games. In fact, since May 29th, the Mets are behind the Phillies and the Marlins in terms of records. The Marlins have the best record of any team in the National League East over the last month and a half, almost 2 months. So when anyone says, hey, the Mets are only a half game out, which is true, a part of that is that we don't pay attention to the Philly struggles, but the Phillies are struggling. The Phillies just lost 2 out of 3 at home to the Angels, the team the Mets are about to face. If the Mets lose 2 out of 3 at home to the Angels, there'll be a freakout. So the reason why the Mets are right there is that very quietly, Philadelphia is also struggling, but the Phillies just improved themselves. And they improved themselves by adding David Robertson. And yes, they can do better than Mets. You want an aggressive trade deadline. We're going to have a big trade deadline show coming up. We'll post it on Thursday. We'll do that live on Thursday. And we'll talk about the expectations of the players that are available and what you're willing to give up. And there's a lot to discuss. There's a lot of meat on that bone. But the reality is this was a small moment, a small piece they could add. And their division rival, who needs bullpen help incredibly badly, just added that player. So not only did the Mets not add the player that could have made them better, the Philadelphia Phillies did.
In defense, they did bring back Brooks Raley. So that's like a tit for tat, right?
Yeah, but that was 2 months ago.
I'm just saying they did add somebody. And yeah, they came back now.
You know why I don't think they added Brooks Raley? And I'm glad Brooks Raley's back. And I actually want to get to him on something important from Sunday's game. Because he was, I almost feel like he was never gone. Like, he had the Tommy John surgery, which completely sucked a year ago. Similar to losing AJ Minter this year, you almost forgot he's on the team. And so even though Raley wasn't here, he wasn't anywhere else either. So, and he was recovering from Tommy John surgery. So I almost look at Brooks Raley's existence as he's always been a Met. Like, when did he leave? But here's where I want to get to Raley. So obviously the Mets beat the Cincinnati Reds, the finale of this series, very important win. They've had a lot of these important games because being swept at home against Cincinnati, a team that's breathing down their neck for one of the wild card spots, would have been outright disastrous. But I want to go to the very end of this game, and we'll work our way backwards. So Edwin Diaz blows the save in the eighth inning, inherits a runner on first, two out jam. So it wasn't really a blown save because he was put in such a difficult spot. He comes in, he walks Eli De La Cruz, he gives up the cheap infield hit to Austin Hayes, and then he hits Spencer Steer. I mean, so three guys in a row got on Diaz, which caused the blown save. So when Mendy makes the decision to not go back out with Diaz in the ninth inning, which I got to tell you, I'm going to take a lot of crap for this, I didn't fully disagree with. Because as important as this game was, Diaz was shaky. He had already thrown 16 pitches. And I know if I use him in the bottom of the ninth inning, A, I don't know if I'm going to get three outs out of him. I have no idea. There's a decent chance he's going to put a guy or two on base. His pitch count's going to be 33, and I don't have to go to the bullpen anyway. And now he is nowhere near available for Monday's game against the Angels. So the combination of I'm not sure he's going to be able to get the three outs, and I'm completely eliminating him from availability on Monday, I wasn't against pulling him, even when the Mets took the lead in the bottom of the eighth inning. But Brooks Raley, if ready to pitch on back-to-back days, which clearly he's not, was the guy to pitch the ninth inning. It wasn't Ryan Stanek. Think about who is coming up in the ninth inning of this game. And I'll remind you, because I'm looking at my scorecard. Marte, Fraley a lefty, Lux a lefty, and then top of the order, if it continued with Friedel, another lefty. And the Reds only had one right-handed bat on the bench and Jose Trevino, because Francona used all those left-handed bats in the seventh inning when they had gone to Waskar Brazoban. So you had this lane of lefties, bottom of the order lefties, followed by Friedel at the top. It was perfectly set up for Brooks Raley. It also would have been perfectly set up for David Robertson if he existed and was on this Met team, but I digress. So I think that once Raley's available to pitch on back-to-back days, because he's not, he's coming off Tommy John surgery, they're going to take it slow with him, he would have been the guy. And he looked so good on Saturday in his return from Tommy John that I would have felt pretty good even with a one-run lead. So instead of going to Brooks Raley, unfortunately, Mendy is set up to have his best option be Ryan Stanek or Chris Devensky if he wanted to pitch him on back-to-back days. But credit to Stanek, who is a multi-time winner of the Net Negative Award. He came in and got the job done. Now, it wasn't easy because Marte hit one 403 feet to start the ninth inning. And luckily, Tyrone Taylor was able to run it down. And after he gave up a one-out hit, got the ground out and the pop-up against Friedel to get through it. But I was thinking that in the ninth inning of this game, that if you had a fully available bullpen, the guy to pitch the ninth inning was going to be Brooks Raley and not Ryan Stanek. Let's go to David Peterson. He was great. In a lot of ways, this was one of David Peterson's most impressive performances, especially when you think about the way this game started with the miscue by, take a pick, Vientos or Acuna, the ground ball to second base on the second pitch of the game, which Acuna made a bad throw on, and he was charged with the error. But Mark Vientos, who has not played first base all year because Pete Alonso has played, I don't know if it's every inning. I don't think it's every inning, but he's played like 99.987% of the innings at first base. And obviously dealing with this finger issue, which doesn't feel severe because he eventually came into the game for defense and got the one at bat. So it was a little scary when you don't see Pete in the lineup and a little worrisome when you don't see Pete in the lineup. But he was available off the bench and we saw him off the bench. But that was a ominous way to start the game when you've got Acuna making a bad throw and Vientos looking like he's never lived near first base ever. Followed by a cheap 0-2 weak ground ball C&I base hit. And so before you're even comfortable, there's first and third, nobody out. And considering how good Andrew Abbott's been, who's on the mound for Cincinnati, and considering how the term we like to use around here, pardon our French, limp dick offense this has been recently, this didn't exactly feel like a good spot. I mean, this felt disastrous. There's two on and nobody out. Peterson, not his fault, clearly, when you look at the error and the weak ground ball. And then he gives up a base hit to Ellie De La Cruz. Like, we are seven pitches into the game. It's 1-0 Cincinnati with two on and nobody out. Raise your hand if you had any confidence. I don't think anybody's raising their hand. But this is where David Peterson deserves such an immense amount of credit. And he's really grown as a starting pitcher. That sequence to start the game could derail anybody. It could derail you completely. And instead, he got Austin Hayes to ground into a double play. He got Spencer Steer to hit a line drive right at Lindor. He worked through a bases loaded jam in the second. And from then on, 1-2-3 third, 1-2-3 fourth, leadoff hit in the fifth, quickly got a double play, 1-2-3 sixth. Absolute complete control by David Peterson. And now you get to the Mendy decision, which is pitch count of 93. Do you let David Peterson start the seventh inning? And I was under the belief that I would, especially knowing, because I'm thinking about this twofold here with David Peterson. Number one, I just trust him. And I don't think 93 is this horrific number. And look, I think the Mets have to be careful with their rotation because they have not pitched a lot of guys on regular rest. And David Peterson has only made a handful of starts on regular rest. Those numbers are terrible. So I acknowledge that. And if you look at the schedule moving ahead, he's not going to pitch on regular rest his next turn. Luckily, he's going to have an extra day. And I do think a part of that may be by design. But you wonder about when you push David Peterson. And you can say this about a lot of guys, but David is the guy we're talking about. When you push a guy to 105 or 108, while it may work in that game, what are the ramifications in one's next start? That's a fair question. I acknowledge that. Very fair question. But because the way this rotation is built right now and the fact the Mets have an off day on Thursday, his next start is going to come with 5 days rest as opposed to 4 days rest, which is typically normal rest. So if there was a situation or a moment where you'd say, hey, I'm going to push him, I would have done it here. And by the way, we got an email about this a couple weeks ago, and I started to continue the numbers on how guys in the Met rotation have pitched on regular rest versus extra days of rest. David Peterson has made 3 starts on what is considered regular rest, 4 days rest. April 23rd against the Phillies, 5 1/3 innings, 2 runs. Not bad, but a long time ago. June 22nd against the Phillies. That was the disaster on Sunday night against Lizardo, 4 innings, 5 runs. And then 5 days later in Pittsburgh, in which he gave up 5 runs in 4 2/3 innings. So 3 starts from David Peterson on regular rest, 7.71 ERA. Small sample size, but 2 of his worst starts have occurred on regular rest. Now, not a problem here because, like I said, this turnaround, at least because of the off day the Mets have on Thursday, he's going to pitch with an extra day. But that's the negative towards pushing him. And I thought about that, but again, having the off day made me on the side of, if I'm Carlos Mendoza, I would have pushed him. And I also, and here's the second part of why I would have pushed him, I know Terry Francona, just based on this series, not watching a lot of Reds, but just based on the way he managed on Friday, he is a platoon guy. And so as soon as you go to a right-handed reliever, which you're going to do because they only have one lefty in their bullpen right now in Brooks Raley, who clearly wasn't going to be available on a back-to-back day, you know you're going to see Jake Fraley. You know you're going to see Gavin Lux. You know you're going to see those guys. So I would have kept them on the bench and pushed David Peterson and gone batter to batter. I mean, look, he comes in and starts the seventh inning, gives up a leadoff double to Tyler Stevenson. Okay, fine. Then you could go to Waskar Brazemont. But by taking Peterson out after 6, it's not only taking your starter out, your most dependable starter out, you now need to find 9 outs. And 9 outs, while better than looking for 12 outs or 13 outs, is still a lot of outs to try to get. Now, credit to Waskar Brazemont. He came in and was good, Waskar, helped out by good defense by Luis Torrens, who threw out another base stealer. How good has he been throwing out base runners? Incredible. Incredible. He goes to Reed Garrett in the eighth inning with 9, 1-2 coming up. And I got to tell you, I managed along with Mendy, and I loved what he did in the eighth inning. I was getting a text on the Mets text chat from one of my buddies bitching about going to Diaz with 2 outs and a runner on first and a 1-run lead. And I'm like, what? Why? This was Mendy saying, I'm going to try to get 3 outs from Reed Garrett, but I'm not going to F around. He puts a guy on base, especially with Ellie De La Cruz coming up. I'm going to go to my best reliever. I'm going to go to my fireman. I'm going to try to put it all out, get a 4-out save, call it a day. The problem was not the managing of Mendy, at least in the eighth inning. The problem was Edwin Diaz wasn't effective. And that's a rare thing to say because he's had such a great, great season, but he was wild. But I loved, I got to tell you, as much as I disagreed with the Peterson thing, I loved the way Mendy managed the eighth inning. Go to Reed Garrett, who got the first two guys out, walks Matt McClain, which you cannot do if you're Reed Garrett. I know Matt McClain's done damage in this series. Like, he's actually been a real pain in the ass. But with De La Cruz coming up next, you can't walk him. Can't happen. And, of course, he does. At that point, totally with Mendoza going to Edwin Diaz. And this was an unlucky Edwin Diaz, but also a wild Edwin Diaz. Because he still walked Ellie De La Cruz on five pitches after throwing the first pitch strike. He also allowed Matt McClain to get a massive jump where Luis Torrens wasn't even in any position to work his magic because he wasn't even going to throw down a second base. McClain got such a lead on Diaz. The unluckiness of the Austin Hayes infield hit. And good job by Lindor on the Austin Hayes infield hit because the runners were moving on that play. And I'm watching this thinking, boy, if Lindor makes the throw and they're not careful, McClain could score from second because he was already running and there's two outs. And so Lindor, I thought, did a good enough job hesitating to keep McClain kind of honest. Because if McClain tries to score, Lindor is going to stop. He's going to throw him out at the plate. But then hitting Spencer Steer can't happen. Here's the positive. And there are some positives you could take out of this. He got the big strike out of Tyler Stevenson, and that's after falling behind 3-1. So the Reds were this close to taking the lead and having this blown save become a disaster. But this was Edwin Diaz's second blown save of the season. Do you know the Mets record in the two games where Edwin Diaz has blown a save? I'm just going to give it. This isn't some trivia contest. 2-0. And that's the key. And we say that. Closers are going to blow saves. Even someone as reliable as Edwin Diaz. And this was a blown save. You come in looking to get one out with a runner on first. Get a freaking out. Walk, infield hit, hit batsman. Legitimate blown save by Edwin Diaz. But he's able to not let it be a disaster by striking out Tyler Stevenson, which I think was the most important moment of the game. Now, there's some important moments here. But Edwin Diaz not allowing this to become a full-blown debacle was probably the most important thing. But 2-0 now in games where Diaz has blown a save. Let's get to the offense. As far as the lineup is concerned, I want to commend Carlos Mendoza about something. If you're going to lead off Brandon Nimmo, just lead off Brandon Nimmo. Stop screwing around. Stop messing around with this. If you go back to the opener of this series when they faced Nick Lodolo, a lefty, we saw this same thing where, okay, it's a lefty, so we can't lead off Nimmo. And since Marte is on the IL, we're going to lead off Lindor. Now, dude, if you're going to bat Lindor second, which right now feels disastrous because he hasn't had a hit in 6 months, or at least it feels that way, then just hit Brandon Nimmo leadoff. It's not like Brandon Nimmo can't hit lefties. So we saw him make the adjustment in this game, Mendoza, by running out Nimmo in the leadoff spot against the lefty Andrew Abbott. It sucked not having Pete in the lineup. I wasn't overly worried. I got to tell you, Pete, and maybe I'll live to regret what I'm about to say. Pete is so tough. And even when he's had injuries over the course of his career, he doesn't miss time. So seeing him not be in the lineup, I thought was twofold. A, obviously he is dealing with this finger thing, which we didn't realize, but maybe we should have on that lollipop throw to the plate he made on Saturday, which was an odd one by Pete. He was probably affected by the hand. But number two, he's slumping. And so sometimes it's okay to just sit a player. You know, instead of saying it's the punt lineup, which is a term I hate, it's, hey, this guy's not hitting. Let's give him a day. And in this case, let's give him 6.5 innings because he eventually came into the game for defense, which you can understand after the Mark Vientos miscue from the top of the first inning. But the offense was the same crap. Let's not sugarcoat that. All the kudos to David Peterson. The kudos to Diaz for not completely collapsing. Even Ryan Stanek for getting through the ninth inning. Brazoban for a clean inning. Great job by the Met pitching. But it's the same crap with this offense. They do nothing. We see Jeff McNeil lay down a bunt after a leadoff hit by Mark Vientos, which I kind of hate because it's the bottom of the order. And Jeff McNeil's actually producing. He's one of their better hitters. I think, though, in that case, when McNeil laid the bunt down, he was legitimately trying to get a hit. And if there's two on and nobody out, by the way, if he gets the bunt down, right, and gets a hit and there's two on and nobody out, there's a damn good chance Luis Torrens is then bunting and setting up second and third one out for Beatty, Taylor, and Acuna, which also may not be the smartest thing in the world. Because, again, think about who the bottom of the order is. Your 6-9 in this game against Abbott was Torrens, Beatty, Taylor, and Acuna. But he lays down the bunt. Torrens doesn't come through. Beatty doesn't come through. They laid down a bunt in the third inning. Acuna bunts after the Tyrone Taylor swinging bunt base hit. And luckily, Brandon Nimmo, who's been very productive, has been the one constant during this struggle that they're going through offensively, came through with the RBI hit to tie the game. And then, of all people, Luis Angel Acuna came through with the RBI double with one out and a runner on second in the fifth inning. But they had a golden opportunity to score more runs, a runner on second, one out with the top of the order. Nimmo strikes out. Lindor lines out. Two on, two out in the sixth inning. Brett Beatty grounds out. Runner on in the seventh, again with the top of the order. Nimmo flies out. Lindor flies out. They're just struggling so much to score runs. It's like surgery to score runs. And I know I've come to this point 100 games into the season. This is not that good of an offense. That's just the reality that took me a very long time to kind of just come to grips with. They're just not that good offensively. Like, yes, Francisco Lindor and Juan Soto and Pete Alonso and certainly Brandon Nimmo make up a really effective big four, however you want to call it, the Flushing Four, or as Steve Cohen said at the the Fab Four. But think about what the Fab Four did in this series. Actually, forget the Fab Four. Let's look at, the Big Two or the Big Three. The Big Three of Lindor, Soto, and Alonso. Okay, those three guys. Soto, Alonso, and Lindor in this series. What were their numbers? You want to guess? Want to give me a guess, Pete? What the collective was in this series of Pete Alonso, Francisco Lindor, and Juan Soto. Go ahead.
Well, I know Lindor was 0-14, which is not good. I'm assuming, dude, if could they be combined like 4-40?
It's a good guess. 2-35. 2-35. So Juan Soto was 1-11. Pete Alonso was 1-10. And Francisco Lindor was 0-14. So you combine that up, and the big guys in the Met lineup were disastrous. What's funny about that is they actually got production from the bottom of the order. Like, but in general, like the offense is, hey, they've got these four really good hitters, but the rest of the lineup you can't rely on. That's in general what their offensive issue is. In this series, it was sort of the opposite. They were getting production out of Luis Torrens. They were getting production out of Brett Beatty. They didn't get any production from their big guys. But I have come to the kind of the reality that while this isn't a putrid offense, and yes, they should get some hits with runners in scoring position eventually, even though we're 100 games into the season, the offense is just not nearly what it should be or what it could have been or what we thought it would be, which leads to this. What's the identity of the 2025 New York Mets? What is their strength? Like, what about this team can be special? And I do have an answer. Like, I'm not just going to be a complete jerk and tell you there's no answer. They just suck. I'm not going to say that. Like, I have an answer. And I want you to hear me out on this and tell me if you think I'm crazy. Because I've come to the, took me a while, but I'm finally at the place of, I can't talk off this offense. I can't tell you this is an elite offense. I can't say that. We're 100 games into the season. They're averaging 4.35 runs per game. The average National League is averaging more. So they are a below average offense despite hitting 126 home runs. And you want to tell me that's going to change over the last 62 games? You want to tell me it's all going to even out because they're going to come through with so many big hits because they're just due to, and now they're going to score 5.5 runs per game? Okay. I mean, I don't know what you're smoking, but sure. Or they're going to make a big trade. Look, you make a big trade, everything obviously can change. So their identity is not their offense. Their identity is not their bullpen, though they do feature one of the most reliable closers in baseball despite this blown save. Here's what they could have. A top three in the rotation that is as formidable as any top three of a rotation in baseball. Think about this for a second. I believe in David Peterson. It's tough not to. You know, we went through the numbers in terms of regular rest, so obviously you got to be careful with him, and he needs to prove he can be reliable on regular rest. But the guy's had an unbelievable season. And he goes out in this game and gives you 6 innings, 1 run. It wasn't even earned. He goes deep into games. He came into this game with a 3.06 ERA. He's lowered it to a sub-3 ERA, and he's thrown 115 innings this season. Then you've got Kodai Senga. Kodai Senga's got a microscopic ERA. The problem with Senga is staying on the field, going deep into games. But he's got a 1.5 ERA. And then Sean Manaea, who... I'm going to trust here what Mendy says. It's spring training. We got to take it easy. But eventually, maybe it's 2 starts from now, Sean Manaea, those 90-95 pitches, he can go deep into games, and he's starting to give you kind of reason to believe, why can't he be the second-half pitcher he was? And if he is, that 3 at the top of a rotation is really good. And that's the strength of the team. And I know there are some people listening saying, well, that's not enough. That's going to win them a world championship. I'm not saying it is, but if you sit here now 100 games into the season and say, what is the best part of the New York Mets? I know it's still a theory because Senga's got to stay healthy. He's got to be stretched out again. Manaea's got to stay healthy. He's got to be stretched out again. But that threesome of Manaea, Senga, and Peterson is damn good. And so if you look at their ERAs, even just over the last calendar year, I mean, it's tremendous. But now they got to stay on the field and they got to stay healthy. But I think that is the identity of this team. Would you agree with that, Hoff? That's kind of the strength right now of the New York Mets, even though, yes, those guys need to prove they can stay healthy?
I mean, I don't want to say yes to that, but it sounds like that's the only thing. I mean, I never thought that the Mets offense was going to be as explosive as we made it sound like. I thought that it was a heavy top three, top four lineup, and I was hoping that some of the other back end guys would be better. But I don't even buy into what you say because I don't trust that these guys can go deep into games. Like, they're effective for as many innings as they go, but it's still, you're talking about Senga going 5 innings.
Let me push back on this. Manaea is literally being traded like it's spring training. Remember last year, did he not go deep into games last year?
He did. He did.
So 100%. Then Manaea is not exactly fair to pick on because it's early. He's only made 2 appearances since coming back from missing the first how many months of the year?
No, of course. But so then you're basically saying Peterson and Senga, and Peterson I'll give you. Senga, I just don't buy into him enough yet because I still think he's so fragile.
Well, that's the concern. The concern is, okay, yeah, those 3 guys. Look, the numbers are the numbers. If you take their ERAs over the last calendar year, you can't argue it. The stats are the stats. Like, Manaea's been great second half, and so far his first 2 appearances at least give you hope that he can build off of what he did in the second half of last year. And Kodai Senga is pitching a 1.5 ERA. It's just about them staying on the field and being able to be effective and go deep into games. Now, one of the big negatives is I mentioned David Peterson on regular rest, the 3 starts he's made. Kodai has not made any starts on regular rest. And we had an emailer bring this up about a month ago. If this team is in the postseason, which is an if, the Mets are certainly not a guarantee to make the playoffs, are you able to pitch these guys on regular rest in the playoffs? Like, the schedule isn't going to permit you to just wait until they're on regular rest. So, as effective as they are, Like, what will David Peterson be in a game four of a divisional series if it's on regular rest? Would they even attempt it with Kodai Senga, who this season they have not pitched one time on regular rest?
Well, that's why I think last podcast, if you go back and listen to 514, you mentioned the, Mitch Keller, and I think that's kind of like where they got to go. That is the biggest trade deadline move they need right now. It's not a bad. It's not, because there's so many holes. It's not just one guy that's going to save the day. But for the rotation to be solidified and to save some of this bullpen, and in the playoffs, who's going to get meaningful innings? You're talking about Peterson. You're talking about Senga. You're talking about Manaea. You're probably still looking at one more guy to give you an extra start, because they can't go on regular rest.
No question. No, you're right. You know, you could celebrate your highlights with Mio Sparkling Sake, a true crowd pleaser. Light, bubbly, and easy to enjoy. Whether you're at Citi Field or your favorite spot, ask for Mio Sparkling Sake by name. A new tradition served chilled, imported from Japan. It's the official sake of Rico Brugna. Enjoy responsibly. Let's get to some of your emails, and of course, we'll pick the Rico I'm the Man Now star of the series and our net negative. I think the net negative is going to be very easy. We'll get to that coming up. Luis writes, guys, if the Mets finally get a real third baseman with that bat, they could absorb Tyrone Taylor's lack of offense in center field. Taylor's defense is great. So if you get a real third baseman like Eugenio Suarez, a starter like Keller, and a bullpen arm like Class A, in any event, they need two arms and a bat. Taylor's defense has been proven to be important and consistent, but third base has been an all-around bust for well over 4 years. I do agree that if your lineup is deep enough, I was actually thinking about this in regards to the Yankees recently, that their lineup is really good. We almost forget how good their lineup is, that maybe you can live with third base being a defensive first position. I'll get more of that on Evident Tiki, but in the Mets case, yeah, if they got more production out of third base, if they got more production out of DH, if they got more production out of catcher, and Francisco Alvarez is being recalled, we'll get to that in a little bit, then maybe you could sell me on Tyrone Taylor in center field. But look, he's a fourth outfielder. He just is. And I'm not sure they're going to be able to add enough offensively at the trade deadline where they're going to be okay with Taylor in center field. But let's also give some credit to Jeff McNeil. He has not played a bad center field. He made that great diving catch on Saturday. Wonderful play. But overall, I don't know what the analytics say, but my eyes have told me he has been acceptable out there. Tom B. writes, guys, I went to Citi Field for Friday and Saturday. The ceremony was amazing. Other than that, not sure where to start with this bullpen right now. I feel like nobody is in the circle of trust currently with Diaz's shaky outing today. I think Brooks Raley will be good, but I think the Mets need to do bullpen acquisitions like they did in 2015 and get someone like Clippard and Addison Reed. Even if the Mets make additional bullpen moves, I still feel like they need offensive help. 9 runs in 3 games against the Reds, where 2 of the runs were gifts from the Red defense in games 1. I wanted to see your input on this. Yeah, I think that they probably need multiple bullpen arms, and there's a few ways you can do it. I mentioned this on episode 514. Hoff just referred to it. If you trade for a good starting pitcher, it can help you in 2 areas. A, it can improve your rotation, and B, Clay Holmes could possibly move to the bullpen and kind of give you that other bullpen arm. So it can almost be 2 trades in 1. But as I sit here right now and I look at the state of this bullpen, you got your guarantees to be on the roster. You got your guys that are filling up roster spots. You got your up and downs. Brooks Raley, it's only one performance, so we don't want to go nuts. But we remember how good he was last year and the year before. Like, Raley was a good reliever. It's not like he wasn't. Unfortunately, he had the Tommy John surgery, and right now he's the only lefty out of the bullpen. Diaz will be fine. Like, the blown save sucked, but like I mentioned, it happens. As long as you can recover and still win the game, which he's done twice now this season, fine. Brazoban, Stanek, and Garrett are up and down. They've been up and down. Now, there's been more downs with Stanek than there's been with Reed Garrett, but Reed Garrett certainly had his ups and downs. Devenski's been good, but skeptical eye. Kevin Hergett, who they just brought back, is basically just filling up a roster spot. Same thing with Alex Carrillo. So I think you look at that bullpen, and to me, it feels like 2 arms would be the thing. Tommy writes, they need a damn bat. Evan, definitely good that the Mets got the win today, or rather they somehow survived by the skin of their teeth. I know you've said it 1,000 times, but it's just so clearly obvious. The Mets need a damn bat. They also need pitching. No disagreement there. I agree with your point about how someone like Mitch Keller would be a great guy to get, along with sending Clay to the bullpen to close out the season. But this is reminding me of 2015, except that this team is allegedly much better than that team. The offense has shown us time and time again it's not just going to work, and now is when Stearns needs to put on his game face and get it done. I know we're all afraid of trading away a future Justin Turner or making a stupid PCA for Javi Baez swap, but we could all agree that Stearns is and should be smarter and more savvy than Brody Van Wagenen. At risk of sounding dramatic, this team needs to make another Cespedes-like trade. Find out who the top bat is, preferably a center fielder, and make it happen. There are enough top names in our farm that we can get a deal done without sacrificing our top pitchers. The Red Sox keep playing well, but Duran is a no-brainer if he's available. During the All-Star game, Joe Davis kept foaming at the mouth of the idea of Arizona trading away their players. It was getting annoying, if I'm honest, and he even mentioned that they could trade Corbin Carroll. Was he high? There's no way in the nine hells that Arizona is trading their franchise player with that team-friendly contract. So people need to not fall for that as a possibility. That said, by if some miracle of stupidity he was made available, there's no name I would say no to get Corbin Carroll. And I'm tired of hearing about Luis Robert. He's cooked, and we all have to make peace with that fact. He might not be that good. Tommy Rose. I don't think they need a Cespedes-like trade. I think 2015 is so different. Like, there's so many different things about that team, where they were, the good of that team, the bad of that team. Like, that team had brilliant starting pitching. They had a clear identity, and their offense was limp. There was also concerns about David Wright. Like, was David going to come back? So they needed a big bat, and Cespedes was perfect. He comes in. He obviously was incredible. I don't think they need a big, big bat. They just need a good bat. And I think you can improve yourself at third base. You can improve yourself at DH. Center field is the most logical, but the reason why it doesn't have to be center field is, again, because of Jeff McNeil. Like, if you added, let's use Eugenio Suarez as an example, because he is kind of the big bat that we feel will be available. He's a free agent at the end of the year. The Diamondbacks are kind of muddling right now. Let's say the Mets traded for Eugenio Suarez. They add this big right-handed bat in the middle of the order. First of all, the lineup just got deeper. As far as how you play guys, Brett Beatty, assuming he's not in the trade, can still play second base. Mark Vientos, assuming he's not in the trade, can still play DH. Jeff McNeil is your center fielder with Tyrone Taylor coming in late, basically, for defense. So I think the Mets, based on the flexibility of Beatty, the flexibility of Jeff McNeil, the DH spot still sort of being open right now, Winker and Marte on the injured list, but they don't need to be guaranteed at bats upon their return. Like, you could add a bat at third base, and it's going to improve the lineup the exact same way. So I think adding a bat, A, doesn't need to be a superstar, but B, I don't think you need to be married to the position it is. It can be a third baseman. It can be a second baseman. It can certainly be a center fielder. I don't think it's about position more than it is the bat per se. Now, they did add a bat by recalling Francisco Alvarez. And I think Francisco Alvarez was so ridiculously good offensively down in the minor leagues. And since the Mets are continuing to struggle offensively, it almost became a no-brainer to recall him. We mentioned on episode 514 that this minor league visit has actually gained the Mets an extra year of service time. And I don't think that's why they did it. They did it because his defense was struggling and his offense was struggling. But let's hope that Alvarez comes up and kind of takes advantage of the new lease on life. With that said, Luis Torrens had a really good series. And I say that with the caveat of knowing that his terrible throw from Saturday contributed to them losing. I totally get that. But as we venture into talking about the Rico, I'm the man now star of the series, I got to start off by making the candidacy clear of Luis Torrens. Luis Torrens, the light-hitting catcher for the New York Mets, who will now go back to being a backup catcher, was 2-for-4 in Friday's game. He was 2-for-3 in Saturday's game, including that incredible 12 or 13 pitch at bat that turned into a walk, and then was 1-for-4 in Sunday's game, including the game-winning fielder's choice. Now, that was about Juan Soto's base running. Great base running by Juan Soto. Great slide by Juan Soto. But Luis Torrens hit the baseball, and that mattered because, hey, 3-2, he could easily strike out second and third, one out, completely different situation. And instead, he hits the ball hard to second base, forces the Reds to have to make a play, and he turns out to drive in the winning run. So Torrens in this series goes a combined 4-for-11, drives in 2 runs, walks a couple of times, threw out a big base runner in the 7th inning, Novelli Marte. The negative was the error from Saturday. So before we continue with the under candidates off, did Torrens do enough of that other stuff to at least eliminate the error from Saturday, making him not the Rico on the Man Now star of the series? Like, is that error disqualifying because as bad and as big as it turned out to be?
I mean, that was pretty awful. I mean, everyone that was in my section, because I was at the game too, everyone was like, what the hell is he doing? Like, what was that? Like, it was so, he threw everybody off. I mean, it was the best deke in history of baseball. Unfortunately, he deked out Pete, he deked out everybody, and he threw the ball away. Does it take away? I don't think so, because, I mean, it was an awful series for so many other guys too. You got to remember that.
Got to be somebody.
Yeah. It was a bad weekend for basically everybody. So I would think that Luis Torrens may still have the edge on everybody.
All right. So let's put him to the side. But again, okay. Offensively, 4-for-11, 2 RBIs, a big caught stealing in Sunday's game, the game-winning RBI on a fielder's choice in Sunday's game. That's okay. Candidate number one. Candidate number two is David Peterson. I mean, tough to argue. 6 innings, 1 run. It was unearned. Gave him depth, gave him length, which is something that this franchise needs basically every time he goes out there. So I think he's another great candidate. Brett Beatty was very quietly 4-for-8 with a home run. Hit that home run in game 2. So he was, again, very productive at the plate. 4-for-8. Brandon Nimmo was 4-for-11. Had hits in every single game, including an RBI, the game-tying hit in game 3 of this series. I guess I could nominate Ryan Stanek. I mean, comes in not an easy spot with a 1-run lead and goes out and gets through it. And he also had a scoreless inning in Saturday's game. So 2 scoreless innings, affected 2 games, kept them in the game in Saturday's game. Not his fault the offense didn't do anything. So those to me are the candidates. I think it's Luis Torrens, it's David Peterson, it's Ryan Stanek, and it's Brandon Nimmo. Am I missing anybody? Those are, to me, the 4 guys.
No, I was going to throw in Stanek if you didn't. So I think you covered it all. I think you did.
So who's your vote? Who's the Rico I'm the Man Now star of the series? Show some balls. Pick somebody.
I may have to say Brett Beatty. I don't want to say Brett Beatty, but I think I have to say Brett Beatty. He was the only one that was really locked in all weekend. 4-for-8 is pretty good. Defensively, he didn't do enough to screw things up. Again, you take away the Torrens stuff, right? I mean, if he didn't have that negative throw, it would have been him. But because Brett Beatty, I think, had a good weekend. I mean, we go back and forth with Brett Beatty, by the way, how he goes lifeless for a week. But then he has these small couple games in a row where he performs well. So I guess you got to highlight it when he does good.
Yeah. And this is a tough one because I don't think there's an obvious answer. I agree with you that I think the error by Torrens on Saturday, not that it disqualifies him, but it's a big negative. And so to be the Rico I'm the Man Now star of the series and have that on your resume is very challenging. But I also think about this offense in this series. The offense did nothing. So do we really want to give it to somebody who is a part of the offense? And that's why my vote is David Peterson. I do. I think that especially when you look at their bullpen usage from the day earlier. So Clay Holmes goes 5 1/3 innings. They use Reed Garrett, They used Brooks Raley, who was not going to be available in this game. They used Ryan Stanek. They used Chris Davinsky. So they had bullpen availability because they used Garrett and Stanek on back-to-back days, but they needed innings out of David Peterson, which is a common occurrence. And not only does he give him innings, six innings, and I think he could have given him more, as we talked about earlier, he gives up one run that is unearned. And not only was there an unearned run given up, it was the first three batters of the game, and this game could have turned ugly real quick. So, to me, it's David Peterson.
Okay, I'm going to sell you one more reason why, too, because, again, you know, he had a decent day on Sunday, but Saturday he did have a nice key home run that put the Mets in a good position to win, Brett Beatty. It's not his fault the team decided to just completely take a dump all over everything. Like, you know, so he did have a on a David Wright retirement day, he stepped up at a big spot to be, hey, no I'm doubt. The third baseman right now. I'm here, and I'm showing you why I could be the next David Wright.
Well, let's calm down about that. I mean, jeez.
Oh, God. And I'm trying to sell somebody that I can't even stand to be on the team right now. But I'm just saying, Brett Beatty.
He had a wonderful series. He did. But the offense scored 9 runs in 3 games. So congratulations for the third time this season. How about this? David Peterson is a 3-time Rico, I'm the man now, star of the series. And that's a really a good accomplishment from a starting pitcher. The net negative is it's one person. It's Lindor. It can't be anybody but Francisco Lindor.
Ooh.
Oh, come on. Dude, the guy went 0 for 15. Like, whoa, really?
I got to fight you on it. I know he didn't play on Sunday, but Ronnie Mauricio was getting hell, dude.
He was. And Ronnie Mauricio heard it from the crowd. He got booed very loudly on Saturday. Really, a lot of people got booed on Saturday. I thought Lindor heard some boos on Saturday. I noticed that. It wasn't as vociferous as the Ronnie Mauricio stuff. But look, Ronnie Mauricio went 0-for-4 in the first game of this series. He took a really disgusting 0-4 in game 2 of this series, including bouncing into a double play, a couple of weak strikeouts. He made the miscue. It won't go down as an error, but he doesn't turn the double play in the sixth inning, and that's all fair, and he deserves to be a part of this conversation. But let's remind everybody what Lindor did. In Friday's game, after going 0 for his first 4, horrible at-bats, foul pop-up, tapper back to the mound, pop-up to first base, ground out to second base, like garbage at-bats that were early in the count. So no full counts, no deep counts, just a weak 0 for 4. He comes up electric spot at Citi Field, tying run at the plate. The Mets have a chance to pull off one of the most miraculous rallies you'll ever see. They're down 8-2 in the ninth inning with 2 outs and nobody on. Like, literally, 8-2 with 2 outs and nobody on, and there's a drop pop-up mixed into this, and he's up as the tying run at the plate. And he pops up to second base. That's Friday night's game. Then you go to Saturday's game, and he collects an 0-for-5 with 3 strikeouts. Again, comes up in a big spot, ninth inning with 2 on and nobody out. And while he hit the ball hard, I'll give him that, grounds out. Almost grounds into a double play. So now we're at 0-for-10. And then in this game, strikes out with a runner on in 1 out in the third inning. Lines out with a runner on second in the fifth inning. Flies out with a guy on base in the seventh inning. So he doesn't only go 0-for-14. Two impactful ninth inning at-bats that go nowhere. Like, come on. I mean, we could pick on Ronnie Mauricio all day, and that's easy fodder, but you can't tell me it's not Francisco Lindor. I love the guy. We all love the guy, but this was a dreadful offensive series, and if you extend this back, the 0-for-14 goes back, what is it now, 0-for-22 overall is the number? So stop with that. He's the net negative, and you know it, and I know it.
Listen, I'm just going to say this much. There were ample opportunities for many players to have a big moment, and everyone fell flat.
Yeah.
I mean, there was multiple. I mean, you talk about runners in scoring position all season long. It just gets worse and worse for this team. It really does.
Dude, and you sit there, we all sit there and try to say, well, eventually it'll change. Just keep getting guys on base, and eventually it will change. They are now 100 games into the season. When will it change? Well, hopefully it changes against the Angels. And before we play the Anaheim Angels, let us just say thank you, because the Angels did take care of business by winning 2 out of 3 against the Philadelphia Phillies. So it's going to be Tyler Anderson, another lefty, the third lefty in the 4 games coming out of the All-Star break. And if you extend it back to the Kansas City series, they faced Noah Cameron, who's a lefty. Angel Zerpa, I don't want to include because he was an opener. But basically, if you do want to include him, that means 5. Let me do the math here. 2 in a row. Yeah, 5 out of the last 6 games will be started by a lefty. And remember early in the season when they went 3 weeks without facing a lefty? Baseball is a funny game. So they faced Tyler Anderson on Monday with Senga on the mound. Old friend Kyle Hendricks, the former Cub, on the mound against Frankie Montas on Tuesday. And then it looks like it's going to be Sean Manaea against an opener on Wednesday. And then they have an off day. A couple of Ricos ago, we were talking about lining the rotation up so that Senga continues to not have to pitch on regular rest and so that the Mets don't have to add a 6th starter. Well, they've done it perfectly because they have an off day on Thursday. Then they go out west. They play the Giants and the Padres. They have an off day on the following Thursday. Then they come home, face the Giants and the Guardians, have another Thursday off day, play 3 games against Milwaukee, hottest team in baseball, and have another off day. All right? Then they play 3 against the Braves, 3 against the Mariners, off day. So they are going through a stretch where until mid-August, really late August, they won't need to add a 6th starting pitcher because of the constant amount of off days that they're about to have. So the way they lined it up is that Senga is always going to pitch with that extra day. Now, starting on August 19th, which is still a month away, that's the stretch where they're going to play 16 consecutive games in 16 consecutive days. And that's where things will get interesting. Now, who knows what the Mets look like on August 19th? Who knows if this rotation is healthy? Who knows if they added somebody before the trade deadline? Or who knows if they called anybody up? I mean, Brandon Sproat is really starting to pitch well at AAA. And it makes you wonder if the Mets would call up one of their prospects to maybe just piggyback with another one of their starting pitchers. Maybe go as simple as that. So it's almost a kind of a soft launch into eventually being the 6th starter. And then you never know if that guy pitches well and maybe becomes a factor that we couldn't even imagine. But right now the Mets are going through a stretch in which it's basically 6 games, off day, 6 games, off day, 6 games, off day, 3 games, off day, until they get to that period of time we're talking about on August 19th when they go to Washington and they play 16 straight days. So it'll certainly be a test, but they face the Angels. Can you please win 2 out of 3? Can you do that for us? As far as the Phillies are concerned, because of course we keep an eye on them and trying to win this National League East, who the Phillies play? They play the Red Sox. So there you go. Maybe we'll get some help from another American League team. But you look at the standings. How about the Brewers? The Brewers have tied up the Cubs in the National League Central. And very quietly, and this is a credit to the Brewers, because sometimes teams go on winning streaks and they get minimized by who they're playing. Happened to us, right? When the Mets had a long winning streak, well, the Rockies, you know, who'd you beat? Red Sox had a long winning streak. Well, who'd you beat? In this Brewer 10-game winning streak, 6 of the 10 wins have been against the Dodgers. And because of that, the Dodgers' lead in the National League West is down to 3.5 games, and they're at 42 losses. They're only 2 games ahead of the Mets. And I bring that up because winning the division, to me, obviously, yes, if you're going to be in the wild card series, you'd rather be home than on the road. And knowing the Mets' record and how much better they've been at home, of course, I'd be fooled to not think that it matters to have home field advantage in that best of 3 series, even if I think home field advantage is overrated. But you really want the first round bye. And right now, the division leader, the Phillies, trails the first round bye by 1.5 games. But that 1.5 games is not to Milwaukee, Chicago. It's to LA. Right now, the Mets are 4 games behind the Brewer-Cub double kind of race going on in the NL Central. So I want to win the division. Obviously, if we're not going to have a first-round bye, give me home field advantage, which is currently not what the Mets would have. Right now, the Mets are the 5th seed in the National League. But look, more importantly than all that, just make the playoffs. I mean, you know, We'll talk about the races, but just make the playoffs and get hot at the right time. That's the bottom line. We appreciate your interactions. You can always email us, therico@gmail.com. We'll give you analysis on the Angels series, maybe some instant reactions after the series ends on Wednesday. At some point Wednesday night, we'll give you our series recap. And coming up on Thursday, we will give you our extensive trade deadline preview. If you have preferences on who they should target, maybe some out-of-the-box thoughts, send it on over, therico@gmail.com. Thank you for listening and subscribing to another edition of Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.